Okay, good morning, Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Cron. We are on the bottom of Pei Zayin, Amud Beis. Last time we concluded with the Mishnah, but let's just review the Mishnah and then we'll go from there. So the Mishnah says, Yodea ani sheyesh nedarim. Someone says, I know that there's an idea of nedarim. Ava ani yodea sheyesh mafirim. But I don't know the concept. I didn't know that there's an idea that you're allowed to do hafaras nedarim. So on the day he realizes that, yafir, he's allowed to mafir his wife's nedarim. Similar case. Yodea ani sheyesh mafirim. I know that you are allowed to do hafaras nedarim. Aval ani yodea shezeh neder. But I didn't know that this neder that my wife took is a neder that was of the type that I could do hafara. So here there's a machlokas. Rabbi Meir omer lo yafir. The Rabbi Meir says he's not allowed to do hafara because he did not know that this was an eligible neder. Aval chachamim omrim yafir. But chacham says you're allowed to be mafir. So the fundamental disagreement here is about whether partial knowledge is enough or complete knowledge is required. So Rabbi Meir would say that because he did not know that this was an eligible neder, he lost his chance because he didn't have complete knowledge. He only had this partial knowledge, and therefore it doesn't work. The Chacham would say, partial knowledge is the same as complete knowledge, and therefore as soon as he realizes that he's allowed to, that this qualifies, at that point he's able to do this hafara. And the Ron had talked about that a bit when we reviewed last time. So the Gemara now is going to bring up a case where it seems, so again, the fundamental disagreement is partial knowledge versus complete knowledge, where Rameir basically says that there's a difference, and therefore if you don't have complete knowledge, you can't make certain decisions. The Chachamim basically say that partial knowledge is equivalent to the full knowledge. But now we're going to come up with a case where they seem to have the exact opposite opinions. Raminu, we have a seems to be a contradiction. The case here has to do with a case of ir miklat, where the case of ir miklat is if someone kills someone by accident in a circumstance, they have to go into the ir miklat. So the question is when and how does that all work? So the pasuk there says below raus, meaning that a person. The case here is that if someone who killed somebody, but because they didn't see them or they didn't know they were there or something along those lines. So because they didn't know they were there, it becomes like an inadvertent homicide. So it's not like he's completely innocent because he did something that was a little bit dangerous, but he did it in a case where he didn't realize the person was there. So therefore it's not considered a mazed situation. Therefore we go to ir miklat. So the words it uses below without seeing it. And the position is, according to prat l'suma, that would exclude someone who's a blind person who would not be eligible for this situation, because the implication is that someone had to be in a position where normally they'd be able to know that a person was there by seeing them, but in this case they did not see them, so that would exclude the blind person. Divri Rabbi Yehuda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which if you follow Rabbi Yehuda, in theory you follow the Chachamim. This seems to go against the view of Chachamim that would say that partial knowledge and full knowledge are the same thing, so it doesn't really matter. However, Rabbi Meir Omer, who Rabos is Asuma, that would include a blind person. So a blind person, the fact that it says below Re'ut, includes the blind person. And the blind person obviously can't see. So even though the blind person can't know exactly where the person is because he can't see them, he knows that he can sense that maybe a person is in the area. So therefore, according to this view, he has partial knowledge, right? So that's different from what Rabbi Meir said back in the Mishnah, right? And the Chachamim said the exact opposite. So how do we reconcile this? So going to Pei Ches Amud Aleph. Rava says, Hacha Minyan Dekra. Each of them are using a specific pasuk to prove out what they're doing in the different cases. So the cases are different because they're how they're interpreting a pasuk. Rabbi Huda holds, Gabi wrote Seachsiv, when it comes to the inadvertent killer, what it says is, V'asher Yavo Esra Eyu Bayar, someone who goes with someone into the forest. So the case is, he's going into the forest with somebody else. Kol davar miyaliyar, that means to anyone who is able to enter the forest, meaning v'suma nami bar mayal yalru, a blind person is capable of entering the forest. So therefore, because the pasuk says v'asher yavoas re'eil biyar, that what it's implying is that the case has to be that as long as he is completely eligible from a perspective of being able to go into a forest, that shouldn't exclude a blind person. V'i amar be'im amar below ra'os. So, but you also have this pasuk says below ra'os without seeing it. What does that come? L'rabos es atzuma. You might say that it comes to include a blind person. Miyar nafgale. But we learn that same thing because it says v'asher yavos re'o b'yar, that someone who goes into the forest with someone else and a blind person, that would include a blind person. So there's additional words of as below ra'os. What does that teach us? Elishma mina below ra'os prat l'suma, that excludes the suma. So according to this view, the additional words of below ra'os comes to exclude a blind person. And Rabbi Meir has the exact opposite view. Rabbi Meir savar k'siv b'vli das. It says about this case is someone who goes without awareness, meaning that they don't know that something is going on. Meaning kol davar mida, that refers to anyone who has awareness of the person being there. V'suma lav bar mida, and a blind person doesn't have that level of awareness. A blind person doesn't know that this person is standing next to him. So according to this, you might say that a blind person should not be eligible for the concept of ir miklat. Via mart below ra'ot prat l'suma. And if you want to say that the words below ra'ot should come to exclude the suma, that doesn't make sense. Mibli das nafkali. He's already excluded by the fact that it says mibli das. So in this case, he's already excluded. So why do we need the words below ra'ot? El shma mina below ra'ot l'rabos is a suma. This comes to include the blind person. So each of them is using these combination of psukim to determine whether the blind person counts or the blind person doesn't count. So therefore, it's not necessarily a contradiction with what we learned in the Mishnah. Okay, great. Next Mishnah. Hamadar hana mechasano. Someone who makes a neder that his son-in-law is not allowed to benefit from his possessions, meaning his daughter's husband. V'rotza leitet lebito malos. But he wants to give his daughter money. So the issue here is that when a woman, her property, the husband has certain rights to it, whether they're complete rights or rights to get benefit from them or whatnot. So he's making a neder here that the son-in-law can't benefit, and he wants to give the daughter money. How does he do this? Omer Lai says to her, Harei ha-mahos ha-elu nesus al-cham matan. I'm giving this to you as a gift. Bilvad, on the condition, sh'le'yeh ba'alaval lecha rishus behem. Your husband has no right to this money. Ela ma'asha'at nosev nosene b'ficha. But this goes to what we've learned previously, that the wife has the right to say to her husband, instead of you supporting me, I'm going to use my own funds, right? So basically he's saying that you can use this for yourself, so therefore he is not eligible to take from your property. So he says two things, that it's a gift for you, and it's something that, you have to set it up in such a way that you're not going to get benefit from your husband from other things, and therefore he won't get benefit from you here. So the Gemara is going to try to clarify this. Amar Rav, lo shanu ela d'armala. This pasuk only really works. It's really the only part of this statement, these two statements that really matter, is mashat noses v'nosenes b'ficha, that b'fich. That the only way this works is if the wife takes advantage of the rule that says that she's allowed to say, I'm not going to benefit from, I'm not going to, you don't have to give me my food because I'm going to reuse my own materials, right? I'm going to use what I already have. So the fact that we had that, he said two statements, that your husband doesn't have any rights to it, that doesn't do anything, right? It's really only the second statement. Avar Amar, but if he said instead, Masha Tirtzi Asi, do what you want with this money, Kenei Yason Baal, the husband will automatically get the rights to it. So anything that he's going to say, whether he says this is a gift for you, or whether he says you use it however you want to use it, any of the things don't really matter, because ultimately the husband has the rights to at least benefit from what's known as the usufruct in our scroll language, was to get like the fruits of the trees or whatever it might be, right? So the fact that he says the second part, without saying the second part, which is about not having the benefit from the husband's, the husband doesn't have to provide the material support because she's going to rely on her own stuff, that's the only way that works, right? Shmuel Omer, Shmuel holds differently. Afil Omer, even if all he said, Masha Tirtzi Asi, do with it what you want, this is for you, Lo Kana Yasabal. He would say that the husband does not kona it at all, right? So it seems puzzling. How does that work? The Gemara questions Rav's opinion. So again, Rav said that he has to say both parts. Maskifle Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira challenged it, going to Amud Beis. Taman Azlahad Shmati Rav. Who does this teaching at Rav follow? ki Rabbi Meir, similar to Rabbi Meir. The Amr Yad Isha ki Yad Baal. It says that the wife, what the wife has is like the husband. So the wife can't acquire property without her husband gaining the right to use it. So that basically that's all, the only way to go. So that's Rav's opinion. That's why he says that you need to have that second statement that you have to exclude, you know, say I'm not going to use you. You don't have to feed me, and I'm going to use my own property. Or aminu, but we have a seemingly machlokas from a different case. Ketzad mishtafim b'mavoi. How do you make a shituf mavoi? So what this is talking about is that in the old days people would live with courtyards, and the way they'd be able to use their stuff together on Shabbos is they would make a shituf mavoi, where they would basically, everyone would have to contribute some sort of food, and they would put it together, and they would make it as if it was a common ownership, and therefore they were able to do stuff in their own, in the common courtyard. So ketzad mishtafim. How does that work? Someone takes a barrel of wine. So there's two ways of doing this, right? So one way is that everyone has to give something. Let's say everyone would have to put a bottle of wine together. Or what you can do is the one person can say, I'm going to put in a barrel of wine. I'm going to give it as a present to everybody who's in my courtyard. And therefore, it becomes like everyone has put their stuff together. So you don't have to go through the exercise of everyone bringing their own wine. He says, I'll put my barrel here. I'm going to say, my barrel I'm gifting to everybody who's in this courtyard. And therefore, everyone has a share of what's there, and therefore you're putting it together. So, he puts it out there and he says, this is a gift, essentially, for all the residents of the Mavoi. And he's allowed to, there's a concept that you're allowed to, you're allowed to give someone, benefit someone without them being present. Therefore, he transfers ownership of this wine to them on his own, and he could do it. He could do it through his Jewish servants, or through his adult children, as well as through his wife. So the third statement through his wife is the problematic one, because in theory, if he is giving it to his wife to make her the agent for him, it reverts back to him automatically, right? We said that anything that the wife acquires automatically goes back to the husband. So if he's using his wife as this transfer agent, when he gives it to her, it doesn't really do anything. And if you're going to say that the husband automatically reacquires anything that he gives the wife, then the Erev did not ever leave the husband's possession, right? The fact that he put it there, or he gave it to the wife to put it there and to benefit everybody else, she can't take a transfer from him because it just goes right back to him. It's a yo-yo, right? So that doesn't work. So this seems to be the way Rav says. Rava says, Afagav to Amar Rabbi Meir, Yad Isha Kiyad Bala. Even though Rabbi Meir holds that you say that the wife, anything the wife acquires goes right back to the husband. Moda Rabbi Meir, Eden Shitov. Here we have an exclusion. Rabbi Meir would say that when it comes to the Shitov Mavos, the Chevan, the Lazachas Lacherim, who, since the ultimate intent is to transfer it to other people, Miyad Bala Zyachish. She does acquire it from her husband. So, you know, in his opinion, is that although the wife typically does not have the ability to acquire things on her own, in this case, because of what he's intending to do, which is to give it to other people, he's allowed to use this loophole of giving it to his wife, who will then give it to other people. But this is not going to go unanswered. Eser Ravino Ravashi, but he provides a challenge. Ela Shazachin Lahen. Through these people, meaning we mentioned all these people that you're allowed to do this transfer through, the adult children and the Evan and the Shifla, etc. He brings a different Bereis. So the Bereis says, Ela Shazach Lahen. These are the people that can do the transfer of ownership to do a Shitu Mavos. Beno Uvito Agdolim, the old adult children, Avda V'Shifla Ha'ivrim, and the servants, the Jewish servants, Ela She'ein Zach Lahen. These are the ones that cannot be Zocha for him. Aide Beno Ubito Akhtanim, through his minor children, the Ivdo Vishukla Akhtanim, his non-Jewish servants, the Ishto, and specifically says his wife is excluded here, right? So you have a machlokas that seems to be different. You have a Bereisa that seems to say the exact opposite. The first view said the wife can be the transfer agent, and we said that there was this loophole that let you do it. But then we have this other Bereisa that says the wife is listed amongst the people that are not eligible to do it. So there has to be a different reason about why this would work. El Amar Rav Ashi, Masnisin b'shiyesh l'chatzer b'osim avoy yaskina. In our Mishnah, that we talked about, that the was talking, meaning that our reference to the Shita Mavos, we're talking about a situation where with the woman herself has the right, owns a courtyard owns a share in that exact courtyard. You know, same way that we talked about somehow that she was able to acquire it on her own without it belonging to her husband. So since she herself has a degree of ownership in that courtyard, she's allowed to be part of this process. The migo, the zachle nafsha, zachle achrina. Since because she has a courtyard, or she has a share in the courtyard, she's allowed to acquire things relative to that share of the courtyard. Because she's able to do it for herself, she's also able to do it for other people. So therefore, as a result of that, it becomes a completely different situation. Okay, great. Next Mishnah. V'neder almana ugrusha, that yakum aleh, that in the case of a widow or someone who's divorced, yakum aleh, that there's no concept of her wife having afara, So what does that mean? Okay, so what's the exact scenario? What case do we learn this? Amar hareini nazir l'acha shloshim yom. A widow or a divorcee says, I'm going to be a nazira after 30 days, meaning 30 days from now, I'm going to become a nazira. Afal pi shanisa besof shloshim yom. Even though she's going to get married in 2 weeks. Right, so you would think that at that point the husband would have the right to make for that neder. Eino yachal hafer. He's not allowed. He cannot do hafara. So she established it on March 1st, saying on April 1st I'm going to become a nazira, and on March 15th she got married. You might think that the husband on March 15th can say out with your neder, but no, that's not the case. And the reason ostensibly is that because it had some validity for some period of time, he's unable to change it. Another scenario, Nadra of Hebrew Shus HaBaal Mefila. If a woman made a neder while she was connected to her husband through Nisuin, he's allowed to do Hafara. Kate said, what is the case here? Amra Harein Nazira Achashloshim. I'm going to be a Nazira after 30 days. Afal Pishnis Alma Oniskarsha Betel Shlosha. Even though if she somehow would become widowed or divorced from him within 30 days before the vow takes effect, Hareza Mufar, right? She's able to do, Hafara is able to happen, right? So ultimately what we're saying here is that what's important is when her status at the moment she makes the statement, not the status at the time that the Naziris was going to take effect, right? So she says it on March 1st, if she's unmarried, a widow, divorcee, and then she gets married 2 weeks later, even though the neder happens after that, the husband can't be mefer. But the other side is that if she says it on March 1st when she's married, and it's going to take effect on April 1st, even though she's going to get divorced on March 15th, the hafara is able to happen because it happened when she was in the status of being married, right? So it's all about when she makes the actual neder. Another rule, nadra bo bayom. If a woman made a neder on the same day that she undertook nisuin, v'niskarsha bo bayom, and she got divorced on the same day, hechzira bo bayom, and the husband took her back on the same day, right? So she was, let's say, married, divorced, remarried, all within 6 hours, right, all on the same day. Eino yachal lahefer. He's not able to do afara because again, at the moment that she did this the neder, she was not in a married status. Zehaklal, this is the rule. Kol sheyatzah rishus atzma sha'achas. If she left her husband's jurisdiction into her own jurisdiction, even for 1 second, eino yachal hafer. So any moment that she became self, whatever you want to say, emancipated, where she's able to look out for her own situation, then the husband can't do afara. So as long as he has full control, he's able to do afara. But if there's any minute that she's on her own, he's not able to. So bottom line, the Mishnah is teaching us two things. One is that the establishment of her declaring the Naziris, it's all about when she declares, not when it becomes effective. And therefore, if she's unmarried, she can't be hit to afara. If she's married, he can do afara. And the second point is that it's all about if she's has any moment of being free, quote unquote, and if any of that happens, even if there's 1 second or 1 minute or 1 hour, he can no longer do it for us. So we'll pause here. Next week, Mirtz Hashem will continue. Everyone should have a wonderful day.
2 weeks left.